Mr. Wood, thank you very much for your feedback, but we're closing down today. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I thought I just solved a problem and now I don't. So I wrote back saying, well, if you're closing down, can I buy the service?
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got a very interesting story from someone that, if you don't know, you probably have used this software if you work in finance. Michael Wood did not start Receipt Bank, which is today Dext, but he didn't make it, but it definitely made him. And we're going to talk about how he took up someone else's more or less side project and now turned it into a software which touches millions of people all around the world. And if you're in a finance team, it's probably touched you in some way. Maybe you're not using it in your own accounts department, but certainly the companies you'll be working with will. And it's been an amazing story. I'm a little bit jealous because Michael's started in software about the same time I have, and he's had dramatically different results, but I'll try and keep that in check and we'll talk about that. So Michael, just maybe you could give us a bit of your backstory, tell us where you are in the world, tell us a bit of your background before we get into it.
Sure. So yeah, my name's Michael Wood, and James, thank you for having me. I was the one of two co-founders at Receipt Bank, now Dext. I'm based in London, and I have previously sort of lived elsewhere in Switzerland, Norway, etc., but originally from Scotland. So London and around is very much home. And I'm now building another business once again out of the UK called Translucent.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Translucent because it's very interesting. Like if you're someone who's on the edge of what Xero or other, you know, SMB accounting software can do, and you feel compelled to move up to an ERP of some sort, but you really don't want to, Translucent can really help you out there. And it's a very interesting topic. We're going to get to that a little later on. But just let's go back in time a little bit. Let's tell us about the origin story of Dext or Receipt Bank. When did it start?
So it actually started in 2010. But I think the key part of one of the key parts, the origin story is 2007. So I was running my own business and wanted to save some money on accountancy and bookkeeping, etc. And so I decided to make the definitely foolish decision to try and run the books myself. So at the time, MYOB, although an Australian company, were present in the UK market. I'm sure many, many people listening to this will remember MYOB being in the UK. And they at the time were advertising themselves as the easy to use accountancy software that an SMB could drive themselves. And so I fell for that marketing line. I bought a DVD, such was the times, of the software and loaded it up and did a year's worth of driving the accounts myself, driving the books myself. And at the end of the year, my accountant, she said to me, well, Michael, normally to do the year end, it costs £2,000, but you've made such a mess of your books, we're going to have to charge you an extra £1,000 to deal with it. And so that was a little galling, but understandable. And then she said, look, to prevent you making such a mess in the future, I think you should stop using MYOB and you should use this instead. And what this was basically one of the first cloud accounting tools anywhere around the world, which was called Cashflow, spelled with a K. So in 2007, I started using Cashflow. And as such, I was not just one of the first cloud accounting users in the UK, but indeed anywhere in the world. So total serendipity, no planning, you know, indeed, if anything, my own foolishness meant I was a very, very, very early cloud adopter of cloud accounting. I went through 3 years of doing cloud accounting, and by 2010, I loved the experience. I was really enjoying it. But I also felt there was a key flaw in cloud accounting, which was previously a lot of the data entry was unambiguously the responsibility of the accountant, because, of course, there was one file that resided somewhere. And as it normally for most businesses resided with the accountant, what most people would do is bring in the Tesco carrier bag, the shoebox of receipts, invoices, etc. But because cloud accounting was available to either the accountant or the business owner, in this case myself, it was ambiguous whose responsibility it was. And because I was always slow to respond to the emails of Michael, can you bring the books up to date? Can you bring the books up to date? By year end, it was always my responsibility because I'd missed all the deadlines for the accountant to do it. And so every year I felt with cloud accounting, I was losing definitely a weekend of time at the end of the year doing the things. But I also felt I was losing thousands of pounds as I was digging around for all those receipts. It's like, I know I got another flight, or I know there were more taxes than that, or things like that. And so I felt I was losing time and money. And so I looked around for a service that could basically scan and do the data entry of the receipts and invoices. At the time, I knew there was a business called Shoeboxed in the US. There was a kind of Dropbox competitor. What they would do is you could send them business cards, you could send them receipts, you could send them all sorts of stuff, and they would scan and extract the data. But I was obviously looking for something that was a bit more finance and accounting specific. So I looked around for something in the UK, came across a service called Receipt Farm, and their promise was, we'll send you an envelope once a month. You stuff your receipts into that, you send them back, we will scan them and we'll extract the data. And my first thought was, this is perfect, I'm going to do this. And they sent me an envelope, as they said they would. I put the receipts in, I sent them back. I got an email 3 days later saying, you know, here's your data. And I thought, oh my God, this is brilliant. This is exactly what I need. This solves the problem. But about 5 minutes later, I was like, well, the problem's sort of solved. The trouble is my data, although it's now in the cloud and scanned and I haven't had to do data entry, it's all over there in the receipt farm app. And I want it over here in the cash flow app. And frankly, as soon as I've sent that envelope off, I think the responsibility is no longer mine. It's now my accountant's. Actually, I'd like my accountant to be dealing with all this as soon as the scanning is done. So I emailed the Receipt Farm customer support and said, you know, love the service, very keen to sign up and become a user. But are you going to do these two things? Are you going to take advantage of the APIs to the cloud accounting apps like Xero, like Cashflow? And also, are you going to create an accountant login so that my accountant can access and manage the process once I've sent the stuff to you? And they wrote straight back, a really good customer support experience. They wrote straight back in about 10 minutes, Mr. Wood, thank you very much for your feedback, but we're closing down today. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I thought I just solved a problem and now I don't. So I wrote back saying, well, if you're closing down, can I buy the service?
Very good. Can I stop you there for a second? So most people would say, you know, it's closing down, you're going to move on. Did you have like too much cash hanging around? Were you like entrepreneurial? What made you want to, were you looking for a new business to move into?
Exactly that. I was, I had started a business before, so I guess I could call myself entrepreneurial. And I was looking for a new business. So there was huge serendipity in the time of my co-founder at Receipt Bank, Dex, Alexis. He and I chatted about 3 months before of, oh, I think it'd be quite good to work together and to start something. And at the time, we were beginning to toy around with starting something in the event management space. But I'd previously helped to build an accountancy practice as a marketing director in the past. So I knew accounting workflows fairly well, not super well, but fairly well. And so I was both looking for a new opportunity and I knew what cloud accounting was going to do. And I knew the impact that something, well, what became Receipt Bank could have on the space.
Right. And did you, and what made you, because like, I'm fascinated by this idea that, you know, buying versus building a new company, like starting from scratch, had you set out with the intention of finding something to buy, and why buy versus just have a greenfield? You don't have to shell out any cash out.
Not at all. So the intention was to build completely. Was there much advantage in the end of buying Receipt Farm? Probably not. Like officially we paid £1 for it. You know, it wasn't, you know, they had maybe 20 clients, something like that. Right. But they'd already sent the email out to those clients saying we're closing down and your account will be deleted in 2 weeks and things like that.
20 clients after how long had they been at it? Like a year or?
About 6 months, I think.
Right. Okay.
And we probably thought they were a bit bigger than they were. They had quite a big Twitter following. Sorry, quite a big, you know, let's say 1,000, 1,500, you know, nothing like Mr. Beast or something today, you know, but, you know, there was enough there that made us think, oh, there's some value here, even if there's no revenue or a client base, you know, there's a bit of a reputation or there's at least a warmed up list or something like that.
Yeah.
And of course, there was some code, not a huge amount, but there was some. So that's why we made the decision to buy. But we absolutely were not looking around to buy. We were looking to start something new.
Yeah, well, even 20 customers, I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, especially at probably something like, what was it, $30 a month or some under $100 a month.
£10 a month, maybe less, maybe 8 or 9, something like that.
But the gap between £0 and £1 is actually a lot more than one in 15.
When we bought it, the revenue was zero because they turned those clients off. So though they had got to 20, they turned them all off and we had to start again from zero.
And were they just happy to get rid of the potential liabilities? I mean, then you basically gave it to, I mean, you're buying it, but it sounds like.
So we gave one of the founders several thousand pounds as a sort of consultancy fee to help us migrate the code. And so that would be the outcome. And those two founders there, one founder had already moved off to the next thing. So frankly, I think it wouldn't be unfair to say he was disinterested. He was already on to the next thing and didn't care about Receipt Farm as was. And the other one, you know, I think it was a useful bit of cash flow for him to take this consulting gig with us.
And what made you think that you were going to be able to do more than add 20 customers in the next 6 months? I mean, these guys have been working on it. They were obviously thought this is a terrible idea. What made you think that you'd be able to do any better?
I think it was, sorry, I don't know why I say I think, I know it was because Alexis and I had previously worked together in our investment business where we sold to accountants. So we knew a little bit about selling to accountants.
Right.
And obviously I had this early experience of cloud accounting and I knew tech and I knew APIs. And if you think back to those two things I asked the Receipt Farm customer support, I said, you know, could you integrate with the APIs and could you make an accountant's edition? We felt those two things were essential for this to be a successful business. Yeah. So we felt the fact that Receipt Farm hadn't done those two things had effectively precluded it from being successful. And that all we had to do is if we did those two things, we at least had a chance of being successful.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm familiar with Shoebox, and in fact, I've been, you know, that business is still going today, but it has done nothing like what Dext has become, a different order of magnitude altogether. And it's just basically that. Like, so that these guys who originally had this company gave it away more or less, were like half a degree away from probably 10 hours or 20 hours worth of work from being able to be the difference between 20 customers and, well, maybe tell us today what it's like, what is Dex like today in terms of customers?
So we sold the business in 2021. I don't have any current numbers, but when we sold it, there was more than 1 million users. And I know it's grown since then. So I'm not sure where the number would be today.
And can I ask about the sale process there? Was that can you talk about who bought it and what was your rationale for stepping off the rocket train? I mean, it sounds like a great business.
Yeah. So HG Capital bought the business, who are a private equity firm with a phenomenal track record in and around accountancy software. They own many, many assets around the world. Ones that might be familiar to your listenership would include Iris, Access, who else in Fathom Reporting in the UK, or sorry, in Australia originally, but in the UK. But yes, they own many, many assets in and around accounting.
And did you run a process or did they just, you were probably getting emails every week from PE firms?
It was a funny one. So you obviously do get different emails. There was two or three people approached us at that point. It was, why did we sell? I would say we had done a bad job of managing the cap table. I think that is the most honest answer. We'd started the business in 2010. This was 2011. So that meant ourselves as founders, early employees, early investors had been in for almost 10 years. And that's a long time in people's investment horizon. We should have done a much better job of managing the cap table, providing exits for people, bringing on new capital with new time horizons. So when a good offer came in 2021, I would describe the cap table as tired and people were keen for liquidity.
This is something I sort of deal with a little bit, in that being able to create liquidity for people on the cap table was becoming an issue. That's what I'm hearing there. Like, people were in 10 years, the early investors were, you know, saying, hey, this is great, I believe you, and all the rest, but 10 years is a long time for an investment. And that tension, and that, was that coming up directly at board? Were you feeling that pressure? I mean, it sounds like your investors helped you.
We felt some of that pressure, we felt it ourselves. You know, we'd been, you know, in it at this stage for 11 years. And at that stage, you know, neither of us were both of us as founders were now non-exec directors, so we were no longer controlling the steering wheel. And yeah, we were keen to get more liquidity, as were much the rest of the cap table. But it's interesting because I could easily see how the business could double, treble in a short amount of time. So it was a funny transaction, because there's one part of you that's, I'm tired and I'd like liquidity. And there's another part of, are you being an idiot? You know, most of the value generation is to come. So it's not the easiest.
The idea of like when to hand it over or when to keep going, like, you obviously were very foresightful in taking the business over from the original founders of the business. And then similarly, people are going to be able to take it to another level, let's say. It's always a tricky one, because let's face it, it has to be an attractive option for them. You're not going to have buyers unless there's obviously value still to be had. And maybe that's the thing. Like, maybe you can be happy that you were able to provide, you know, find a good buyer who has something worthwhile, right? So, like, you know, I've made money in the past and had very unsatisfied customers, and I've made no money with very satisfied customers. Neither of those is ideal. So, sure. You know, the sweet spot is being able to say, well, okay, fair enough. You know, I'll be happy to move on. And, you know, that's it. You we'll wait and see what they do with it. But one of my heroes, Jason Cohen, I mean, he sold one of his old businesses, a Smart Bear, for at the sub 10 million or 20, you know, that sort of level. And now it's a $1 billion company. So, you know, he has a very funny line. He says, yeah, I've started $2 billion companies. Unfortunately, I sold for 10 million, you know. Like, okay, well, congratulations. That's brilliant. That's very good, very exciting. So bringing on then a little bit to what you're doing now with Translucent, because the interesting thing is you've had what most people would define as success. You've got a green field in terms of what you're doing now. We'll talk a little bit about what Translucent is. And then I'd like to ask you, you know, what will make this business and your life better? What have you learned from sort of going through this whole cycle, and then what you're trying to do, both in terms of your business and your opportunity, but also what's going to be better? Because obviously you decided to exit from being a software company owner and you're opting into doing it again. So what are you hoping to change this time around? Maybe we'll start with that, actually, before we get into it. Like, what are you hoping to achieve with Translucent? We'll describe what it does in a minute, but like, what attributes do you want to have happen this time that you didn't have last time?
So when we started Receipt Bank, it was very obvious what cloud accounting was going to look like for me in 2010. And that was the motivation and the conviction that Receipt Bank was the right thing to do. And in 2022, which is when I started Translucent, it was very obvious to me what the next era of accountancy software looks like. And so that excites me. It excites me, the ability that's going to come with AI for CFOs and accountants to do DIY software. It excites me the productivity that's going to come. It excites me how the gulf that has historically existed between the financial numbers and the non-financial numbers, is that gulf is going to disappear, and the finance team is going to be effectively strengthened by the fact they're going to be able to have much more access to the leading indicators, the non-financial numbers. So I think we're on the cusp, for several reasons, of a revolution that was as big as desktop to cloud. And let's just call it cloud to AI. It's as good a phrase as any. And so I felt it's a really exciting time to come back into the industry. And I also, to be frank, I stopped being a receipt bank executive at 41. I think that's a little young to retire. I thought, oh my God, it's going to be pretty embarrassing in the retirement home at 85 if someone says, what did you do? And it's like, oh yeah, I started a company 40 years ago, but I've done nothing since. If you know, maybe there's just a bit too much sort of Protestant work ethic in me, but I felt I should do something else.
Interesting. And I mean, many years ago, by the time you were starting Dex, I think 2010 or so, I was living in Mendoza. I had a side hustle. It made me a couple of grand a month, and I had no job. I was doing the Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week thing, you know? So I got my work down to about 3 or 4 hours a week, you know. But my problem was wine o'clock started off at 6 and then 5 and then a glass of lunch. And then it was like, well, there's actually nothing to do. So pretty soon it was like, well, I was waiting for 12 o'clock so I could reasonably have my first glass of wine. Now, I'm not an out and out alcoholic or anything, but like the point was, with nothing else in your time, but if you don't, you're going to spend your time doing something, you have to pay attention to what it's going to be, you know.
Quite great phrase. That's a great phrase, James, right there. You're going to spend your time doing something, you've got to pay attention to what it is. That's a great phrase.
All right, so interesting. So you saved yourself more or less by getting back into, back on the horse, you know, making a dent in the universe, I guess. God help us, our dent in our universe is accounting and finance, SMB finance, both of us, I guess. We love it. I didn't know as a little boy that was my dream, but apparently it was. And so let's start off with what's the, you have a very nice phrase, which is the zero NetSuite gap. Have I got that right? Well, what is it and why does it happen?
So in building Receipt Bank is a company with offices around the world. And so we had offices in Sydney, in Paris, in DC, in London, in many other countries. I think we had about 8 entities around the world. And most of those entities were run on zero. And so in around 2015, we encountered this problem of running a multi-entity business on SMB cloud accounting software. Right. And it was a problem. You know, you've got all sorts of problems. You've got the problems of intercompany transactions. You've got the problems of group reporting. You've got the problems of consolidating the bank to know your cash position. There's lots of different problems that come with it. There's problems of, you know, unifying a credit control process, a procurement process, whatever it might be. Because, you know, obviously, it would be a truism to say a business should only have one accounting system. But the reality is, for most multi-entity businesses around the world, they do not. They have an accounting system for each entity, and those accounting systems don't talk to each other or are in any way compatible with each other. So that was the problem I saw in 2015 with Receipt Bank. And we were becoming a bigger and bigger business, and it was becoming more and more of a problem. And in the end, a new CFO came in and said, we need to move to NetSuite. And that is a very expensive migration. It is a very time-consuming migration, both in terms of the time it takes from the team, but also the time you've got to plan it and run dual sets of books for and things like that. And it really intrigued me that although there are mid-market solutions out there, they all tend to be very geographically narrow. And frankly, they don't offer much beyond coping with multi-entity. And so there was certainly no point in us moving to one. And so in the end, we made the move to NetSuite. And I was just very struck then at the gulf. You know, you're moving from something like zero that at the time, let's say, cost £20 per month to NetSuite that cost £20,000 a year. You know, it's that kind of gulf. And so I saw firsthand then the zero NetSuite gap. And what's happened since then is I actually tried to give the idea away to quite a few entrepreneurs. People would say, oh, Michael, do you have any good ideas? I'd be, well, if you want to build a huge business, there's this really exciting opportunity of bridging the zero NetSuite gap. But as often, you can't really sort of give other people ideas. They've got to feel the motivation. They've got to feel the desire. They've got to understand or empathize with the client issue. And so what we're doing at Translucent is we're building on top of Xero, on top of QBO, and on top of other cloud accounting SMB systems around the world. So that we're saying no matter where your entities are, whether they're all in the UK or whether they're in France and Germany and Australia or whatever, you can keep using, frankly, your world-class cloud accounting software. But we will tie them all together. We will turn it into a single system. And so that's what we do at Translucent. We basically suck all the data out and then do the group workflows on top. As I say, that might be intercompany. It might be bank consolidation. It might be group reporting. It can be all sorts of different things. We're building workflow after workflow after workflow. We're still a young business. We're only 2 years old. So we're still early in our journey of what our solution can do. But we're working on more and more work. And so what we say to our users is, no, you absolutely do not leave Xero. It is perfect for your intra-entity workflows. You want to have VAT return, you're running payroll, you need to run a P&L for that entity. It does it perfectly. Why would you move? You know, no mid-market solution or frankly, even NetSuite will do it any better than Xero will. But what we will do is we will help you with your inter-entity workflows.
Okay, so what I heard there was you can have, let's say, I don't know, even Xero in two different jurisdictions or maybe even Sage and QuickBooks, I don't know, in different entities. And, you know, a lot of companies grow by acquisition, so you could have different systems coming together. I mean, this is the dirty little secret of, you know, software companies that work to sell to finance teams is basically multi-entity. Like I have found that is actually the feature what people will pay for. Like no matter, we spent 10 years building our software, adding OCR, you know, doing all sorts of fancy things, you know, plugins for this and, you know, all the different fancy stuff. But at the end of the day, what actually really is the pain point is like, you know, being able to segregate the data so that not everyone has access to all the data. And then being able to, you know, that functionality alone is kind of what trips people up and makes people go. So can I ask a question then about how, what I hear there is you're sort of putting it all up into like a unified model at the top. Sounds like you're taking it out of the different systems. And then how do you handle all the different GLs? Do you have mappings so you can, you know,
you map for different processes. So if you're doing consolidation and a group reporting for your P&L, obviously you map the chart of accounts appropriately. So we've got all your charts of accounts from your Xeros, your QuickBooks, your Penny Lanes, and you map them as you wish. Equally for intercompany transactions and your intercompany loan accounts, we will try and identify them, but you also can map them appropriately. So definitely in setup, there is some mapping going on by the user. But you described it perfectly. There's, you know, we basically give a unified model. We already pre-integrate with the Xeros, the QuickBooks, etc. And yeah, we will then keep a current and live copy of the data. So as I say, you don't migrate away from those solutions. You keep using those solutions. And it means you can suddenly run a multi-entity business, a large group. And, you know, we have clients who have two entities and we have clients that have 80 entities. And it works just as well at either end of the spectrum. But it just gives them that single system. They have one place where they can go in live and look at their bank balance across all their entities. They have one place they can look live at the P&L across all their entities. Hmm. They can drill down into any transaction, whether it be accounts payable, accounts receivable, a journal, a bank transaction, in one place. So that's what we're doing.
And who should really consider this? Like who would be a perfect chef's kiss customer for you? Like who would be there?
So it's just anyone running a multi-entity business. Like there's no question the more entities a business has, I think the more they will feel or they tend to feel this pain more obviously. So there's no question when people come to us with 5+, 10+ entities, it would be highly surprising if they didn't discover some pretty impressive value straight away. But as I say, we see people, two entities signing up every day and being, no, this makes a huge difference to the finance team's lives. So And often I get asked about, oh, is there a particular number of employees or amount of revenue or a particular vertical? We just don't really see that. You know, we've, as I say, we've got clients from all around the world, all different verticals. And it really is, do you have a multi-entity business or not?
There's this fancy term, psychographics, which is, it's not necessarily the demographic of where, you know, what size of company or an industry they're in, but like the challenge they're solving. And it really sounds to me like when you're thinking about, I need to start shopping for NetSuite, basically stop and think, okay, well, maybe there's an alternative here rather than going that way. Not to pick on NetSuite, but any of the ERP solutions, you know.
So I think there's three reasons that people go to NetSuite and absolutely should go to NetSuite. They shouldn't think about Translution. They should keep going. And the three that I often see are, or three of my most common CEOs. One is the CFO drives NetSuite. That's what she does. You know, you've got a CFO. That's her way of doing things. You know, her and her team like to drive NetSuite. Well, if that's the bit of software the team are acclimatized to, absolutely NetSuite's the right thing to do. We also see situations where auditors insist on a solution like NetSuite, or indeed NetSuite itself. And again, you know, I'm certainly not going to advocate anyone pushing back on what their auditor says. So 100% great reason to move to NetSuite. And then the third one is if you're on track to do an IPO, again, you know, you need the systems in place, you should keep going with NetSuite. But what we see is, as I say, there's these mid-market solutions that are below NetSuite and above Azure or QBO. And it's those solutions, if anyone's on those or thinking of moving to those mid-market solutions, those would be the ones I would really press to take a look at Translucent. Or if you're trying to tie your multi-entity business together with manual processes and spreadsheets, again, that's where Translucent can really make a difference. So I wouldn't see us as a competitor to NetSuite at all, but I would see those mid-market solutions. I'm not sure what they really will offer you beyond staying on combining Xero and Translucent.
Yeah, well, I have an upcoming podcast with one of our partners, a fractional CFO, Ben de la Cretas, and he has an amazing, I asked him, why the hell are you using us? You know what? Sometimes I'm just like, what is it exactly? And he said, when he was in college, you know, he did an MBA and he described how he had a lecture and he described how buying an ERP was like pouring concrete around your business processes. What he likes to use us for, and, you know, in this similar stage is where, to avoid doing that, if you want more flexibility to really figure out what your business, until you fully know what your business model is, you know, it's, you delay it until you really know, because a lot of the businesses he deals with, for example, in biotech, they're doing one thing one next week, one thing one week and another thing the next week. And it's not totally, maybe a newer growing business. You're not totally sure of the shape of it. The business strategy might change or whatever. It's only when you're really certain then. And then when you're really certain, you know, there's NetSuite, but then oftentimes when you're really certain, there's very specific ERPs that really help, you know, that type of business. So it's interesting. Okay, very cool. So I'm going to wrap up with two questions. One is, how can people get in touch with you? And the second one is, who is your business hero and why?
Cool. Well, to get in touch, that's really easy. The domain is just translucent.io. So anyone, feel free to click in, sign up. It takes 5 minutes, less than, to integrate, get the entity set up and begin to see the data. So, you know, it's not something that takes weeks. You can be up and running in minutes. Equally, I'm on LinkedIn. Easy to find, sort of Michael Wood. I don't know my exact LinkedIn handle, but I'm sure typing in Michael Wood Dext or Michael Wood Receipt Bank or Michael Wood Translucent will easily show me up. And my business hero, I don't find this an easy question to answer, but I think someone who seems, for some reason, dramatically unfashionable as a business hero, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but it's Jeff Bezos. You know, just what he has done and his, obviously what he's built, but the culture and elements of the culture and elements of the processes that persist are so impressive, and the standard set and the way of setting up culture. And of course, you think about, you know, the enormous hit that is AWS, but their willingness to take risks, to experiment, to do all sorts of things. I think all of us can learn from him for a long time. Whereas if I was to say someone like Steve Jobs, as impressive as he was, I think it's much, much harder to apply the lessons.
Well, for Jeff Bezos, I mean, he doesn't, Jobs and Musk and these guys, they use their personality, even Richard Branson, like they use their personality. They obviously have a PR team. We all know who Jeff Bezos is, but I don't get that sense from him. Like there's one very janky interview with him back in the 90s or something with a full head of hair, which that's the one. And then most recently,
I know the one you mean. I know exactly the one you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's one, he came out on the Lex Friedman podcast recently. And that's the, and between those two, I've never seen really interviews with him. He's been kind of, if you just judge him by what is achieved, it's nothing about, there's no cult there really. Like you're right. He's kind of uncool to like, because, you know, he's not out there. He's not trying to do anything other than upgrade his wife every now and again. I guess by the sense of it, you know, that's not exactly an endearing attribute. But like, but you measure him by, you know, the business. I mean, I don't know if I'd like to work at Amazon. It sounds like you really need to be on your game. It sounds like it's a kill or be killed. It's a real sort of, what do you call them? Alpha environment, you know.
I'm not sure. I think I would agree with your first statement. I think you have to be on your game. I'm not sure if it's an alpha thing though. I'm not sure about that though, but it's, but isn't that, if it is about being on your game, isn't that an impressive achievement given he now exited it, you know, five plus years ago? I find reading his old memos or annual letters or whatever he called them, I find very, very useful. And yeah, I think there's a lot to be taken.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for coming along. And if you're still listening, congratulations. Your special reward is to be able to go to procurementexpress.com/newsletter. Sign up for our newsletter and you're going to get freshly served podcasts into your email every Thursday afternoon or so. And if you are a software founder like Michael that serves, you know, SMB finance teams, I would love to hear from you and maybe get on and we can have a chat about how you help finance teams achieve their goals. Thanks very much for coming, Michael.
Thank you, James. I've enjoyed it.